The dog days of summer often mean one thing to members of Congress, and that is they're away from Capitol Hill for the August recess. But a hard-fought presidential race underway, a lot of stuff is roiling voters back home. Congressman Emanuel Cleaver, for instance, has been forced to deal with the aftermath of a hacker posting the congressman's cell phone number, home address, and other personal information online. Congressman Cleaver hails from Missouri's 5th District, which includes Kansas City. He's in the studio this morning along with his colleague, Congressman Kevin Yoder from Kansas's 3rd District. Congressman Cleaver, always nice to have you.
Well, good to be here with you.
Congressman Yoder, nice to have you too.
Thanks for having me back on the show.
Empty nester, Congressman Cleaver, what do you want to tell me about it?
Well, what I did when Evan, our youngest, went off to college, on a Monday morning, I got up, walked to the stairwell to scream up to ask him, are you up? And I thought, oh, my goodness, there's nobody here.
Habits die hard, yes. Don't they?
Yes, and the house is quiet.
And the house is very quiet, yes. Let me just tell you for the record. Well, Congressman, let's begin with that hack of the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, which occurred on August 12th. A hacker using the handle of Guccifer 2.0 publicized the names, phone numbers, and emails of Congressman Cleaver and other House Democrats and some of their staffers. The result for you was an outpouring of hate. Tell us about that. I mean, what kinds of things were you hearing, and how did you handle it?
Well, first of all, I was in Mississippi, so that created a problem because when the very, very kind gentleman, a Republican—
From Raytown, I think.
Yes, mm-hmm. from Raytown, whose children went to Our Lady of Lourdes, where our children attended, called me and he said, look, I didn't think I'd get you, but want to let you know your personal information is on the internet, and you're probably going to start getting some calls.
And he said, and "Boy, was he right!"
Yes, he was right, and which I appreciated him. And then they came in; they started coming in from all over the country. But we had an abundant number from right here in the Kansas City metropolitan area.
How do you handle that, Congressman, after all these years of public service?
Well, you know, this is not the first time that I've had something like I've had a couple of things far worse than this to happen. The good news is that I had Kansas City, Missouri police with me when I was mayor. But, you know, it doesn't make you feel good, and it frightens my children. My children are not happy. They had a sit down with us yesterday and to talk about, you know, our situation and our home and so forth. All you can do is try to be as careful and secure as you can. We've done that.
You've asked for an increase in security, I should point out.
We did request some security measures, and the Capitol Police flew in from Washington. Did a survey of our house. It was the second one. I had one done when I was mayor, and then they made suggestions, and we have done a lot, and we will continue to do other things too.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry about that. I'm sure it's got to be a difficult situation.
Well, we're creating a mean-spirited society, and the internet, which was created with a great deal of hope and excitement that we had just done something that was going to be of immeasurable value to the universe, and it has been. But with good sometimes comes ugly, and to be sure, the internet offers people an opportunity to do anonymous ugly things. And
cover story of Time Magazine this week: why hate has taken over the internet. I mean, interesting topic, you know.
Yeah, I saw that article. It was quite interesting, and I think quite accurate.
Yeah. Have they caught Guccifer 2.0?
I don't think so. I know that they're looking for him. I think the FBI is involved in this. The weird thing is the second person who called said the word Guccifer. Well, there was a CNN correspondent with whom I talked right after all this happened. I'm not high-tech, so she took my phone and, for example, there was one call that said KKK, and she said, "Don't open that." And I said, "Well, why? I want to see what they're saying." And she said, "If you open it, you open up your life, because they'll use this to get other information." But when they said Guccifer as an ordained minister, my first thought, he just called me Lucifer.
Yeah.
So I thought, this is weird.
Congressman Yoder?
Yeah, Steve, I might Emmanuel and I have, we've been around the district. We've done town hall meetings. We've spoken out in D.C. We're both, I think, co-chairs of the Civility Caucus in D.C. right now. And so there's two issues at play here. One, which you're talking about, which is the state of political discourse and how we treat each other, how we talk to people we disagree with. Obviously, the internet creates some anonymity, and there's the keyboard warriors that can write. And they really write in a way to try to be sometimes as mean and nasty as possible because they want to get your attention somehow. But there's also the issue of the invasion into privacy of everyday Americans, members of Congress, everyone. And obviously we put ourselves out there when we run for office. But Emmanuel or any colleague shouldn't have to be in a situation where they fear for who's going to ring their doorbell or who's going to call their personal phone. And so I think all of us have to be aware this isn't just a DNC hack issue, mm-hmm. right? I mean, it happened to Democrats, but it could easily happen to the RNC tomorrow. And I know maybe some politicians have been like, ah, that's funny, that's the other side. I mean, that's horrible. And I think we all need to be speaking out on this issue and encouraging a better discourse and also investing in what we need to do nationally to ensure that we can combat cyber threats that can affect any small business, any organization.
Makes you wonder if they can hack the DCCC, they can come hack the Republican campaign committee.
Oh, of course. I'm sure they can. And they may have. They may be waiting for an opportune time to release that. And so I think it's an awareness we all need to have.
Well, Congressman Yoder, let's move on to a different issue. Last week, the State Department confirmed that a $400 million cash shipment to Iran in January was tied to the release of four American citizens who'd been detained in the country. The federal government confirmed that the U.S. withheld delivery of the cash as leverage until the U.S. citizens had left Iran. Missouri Senator Roy Blunt and other Republicans accused the Obama administration of misleading Americans, paying ransom to a state sponsor of terrorism and giving this regime the resources and the incentive to target more Americans. Those are the words of Senator Roy Blunt of Missouri. To what extent do you share that concern?
Well, I absolutely share the concern. I think most Americans don't think the United States government should be in a position of paying a bribe or a ransom for hostages that are taken, primarily because it increases additional hostage taking. That's been a longstanding policy of our federal government that might temporarily get a few people home, but it will, in the long term, mean more people are taken. And so it's against the tradition and custom and the laws of our country. At first, they said it wasn't a ransom. It was just coincidence. That was the stories that were coming out the first few days. And so I think it's helpful that we're getting the full and complete picture so we know what we're doing. I think
Did the administration mislead the country?
I think they did. I think a lot of people I think the image of a pallet of cash being taken off of an airplane, it just all sort of seems so unseemly. One of the reasons the government couldn't do this in the normal banking ways is because there's sanctions in place against this country that doesn't allow banking to occur. So they had used foreign currency. And I think it expresses a larger frustration that we all have about how we've dealt with Iran. They're the largest state sponsor of terror in the world. A lot of this money is going to end up in the battlefield against Americans, against innocent Americans.
Yeah.
And I don't think many of us feel that we're safer having move forward on the Iranian deal. Now, I know many people think that's a continually debated topic in this country, but I have a lot of constituents who are concerned that we have empowered Iran, that we have given them a seat at the table with us to show their strength, and that they have increased their power in the Middle East and in the region. And so in many cases, it has not been the success that it was touted to be, and ultimately we'll see whether it stops Iran from becoming a nuclear power.
Congressman Cleaver, what was your take on this? Did the Obama administration mislead the country when it came to this $400 million?
I'm not sure that there was a great deal of intentionality, but it was, it's one of those situations where, when you come out and make a statement because you have to make a statement quickly, sometimes they're done in a clumsy way. But the important thing here is that this money actually belonged to Iran. It goes back to the era of the Shah of Iran. So it's not like we took U.S. tax dollars and put them on a pallet and took them to get hostages.
We've kept this money frozen in American bank accounts ever since the hostage crisis.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. Way back to with the Shah, who allegedly was one of our friends at the time. So You know, I think when you look at the whole story, there are some parts of it that doesn't look bad. It does look like pay for ransom, but when you think it's their money, we held it back to make sure that the plane carrying U.S. prisoners had landed, I think, in Germany before we took off with the money. And I think it was like, here's an added level of protection. You're mm-hmm. not going to get the money if you try to pull something with keeping our U.S. citizens.
816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Congressman Emanuel Cleaver, Congressman Kevin Yoder from the Kansas side, both in the House here this morning, ready to take your questions. Again, 816-235-2888, or you can tweet us at KCUR up to date. You know, I think it's fair to say, Congressman Yoder, that most Americans don't think Congress is getting a whole lot done during this presidential campaign season. Is that an accurate assessment?
Well, I think it's accurate to say that most Americans don't think that Congress is getting a lot done. I think the reality is there are a lot of positive things that have moved forward just even in recent months, and a lot of bipartisan bills that Emanuel and I have both supported. You know, in recent weeks, we passed a major mental health reform act that had been in the works for years, that was very bipartisan, that works towards putting mental health on parity with physical health issues, ensuring that we can invest in mental health treatment and coordinate services and improve and reform our mental health in a way that can help people get the treatment that mm-hmm. they need. The opioid addiction bill, you know, that's a major epidemic in this country, and that was a bill that had been stuck for a long time. That moved, a big bipartisan bill that invests in, again, helping treat that like a disease, not just throwing people in jail, but getting them the treatment they need so that we can stop the opioid epidemic. You know, I've been proud of a couple of things in particular. We worked really hard in the last year to get additional funding for NIH medical research. You know, with the work that we put forward, and Emanuel supported this as well, we had the biggest increase in NIH funding in this very conservative House and Senate in 13 years. In fact, we doubled the president's request for increase at NIH from $1 billion to $2 billion increase.
What was the thinking behind that?
Well, the thinking behind that was that this is something that should cross party lines, that cancer and Alzheimer's and Parkinson's and heart disease, they're in every neighborhood in our country. And we need to invest in finding cures for these diseases. 600,000 people will die of cancer each and every year in the United States. We all know somebody it happens way too frequently. It's heartbreaking. A lot of these diseases that are in this country or in the world are rare diseases. So you don't have tech firms researching these diseases. You have the federal government playing the primary role. And of those rare diseases, majority of those are children's diseases.
Yeah.
So I think making public awareness about the importance of investing in research at the National Institutes of Health is critical. We get contacted by people who have diseases. They come into our offices. I know Emanuel has, I have, their families, their advocates. And it breaks my heart. And it's one of those things that has really transformed me. I've been pushing for this since day one. I actually was able to get a letter signed by half of the Republican conference almost saying that we ought to triple the president's request in this conservative caucus. So there are some really bright spots that are making a difference that don't always hit the papers. I got a bill passed called the Email Privacy Act that I worked on for 3 years. Emanuel supported that as well. Started out with about 20 co-sponsors. I worked on it to stop the government from reading emails of Americans without a warrant. Very common sense stuff. Ended up becoming the most co-sponsored bill in the entire United States House. Right here in the little third district of Kansas, was co-sponsored bill the entire House. And this spring, it passed 419-0 in the House and moved over to the Senate.
Congressman Cleaver, I'm wondering to the extent to which you grow weary of the American public's perception of Congress and the low poll numbers. I mean, obviously, some of that deserved. Do you grow weary of it? Just
absolutely, I do.
Week in and week out,
I do, and I think we contribute to it. Unintentionally, but we contribute to it because, you know, people will listen to many of the comments that are made by members of Congress. Thank God I'm not including my friend Kevin Yoder, but people, you know, they'll make really nasty comments, you know, calling the president a black Sambo, that kind of thing. And then I think on some of the key legislation, like a transportation bill, we desperately need a transportation bill. Particularly when you think about China spending 9.4 GDP, percent of GDP on infrastructure, and we're a half that.
Wow.
It means we've got to get a bill passed. And I think the Zika virus, we've got to get something done on that. And I think we got to make sure that if you're on the FBI's terror watch list, you shouldn't be able to buy a gun. We got to get that passed. Now, Blaine Lichtenauer and I started work a year ago on a bill to reform
the congressman
HUD,
from Central Missouri,
from Central, and a good friend of mine, and House Bill 3700. It passed and signed by the president. It was the first time since 1987, according to congressional research, that a major bill moved through the House and Senate without a negative vote.
This is the housing bill you're talking
housing
about.
Housing bill.
Yeah.
It overhauled HUD, and it's the most significant bill as it relates to updating HUD in the history of the department, which started in 65.
How does that bill change the prospects for someone who is in need of public housing in this country?
Well, it allows, in some instances, where people with a certificate that they can move in a better neighborhood. They don't have to stay in a neighborhood where the school test scores are low and unemployment is high. The research shows that if you can move out of those neighborhoods into another neighborhood, your likelihood of going to college increases, the likelihood of you getting a good job increases. And so we have these mobile Section 8 certificates that we put in the bill, and it's one of the most, having lived in public housing, I can tell you that's one of the most significant things that was approved.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to some phone calls at 816-235-2888. Congressman Kevin Yoder, Congressman Emanuel Cleaver here in the House with me. Dale from Kansas City, Kansas, good morning.
Good morning. I had a question for both of the congressmen. There was a legislation called House Joint Resolution 88, and this dealt with the fiduciary responsibility of insurance agents when people are wanting to buy investment packages, which would have required the agents to, the idea of this joint resolution was to overturn the consumer protection agency's quest to give people or require agents to have that fiduciary responsibility when dealing with clients. Congressman Yoder voted to override that legislation requiring the fiduciary responsibility, whereas Congressman Cleaver voted for it. I'd like to hear each one of their explanations why they voted the way they did.
You were calling
the
legislation, Kevin?
You know, this is another example of a federal government regulation that didn't go through Congress. It didn't wasn't debated on the House floor. It came out of the Consumer Finance Protection Bureau, which is an agency that was created in the last few years. Huge agency, lots of employees, expensive, et cetera. And these regulations come out in many ways without having understood how these regulations actually affect the people that they're regulating. Unlike a law or an act that Congress takes where we've had town hall meetings, we've discussed them, we've met with the various constituencies, we've tried to forge a compromise, these regulators just bowl right over Congress and they enact rules that have the force of law, even though it hasn't been voted on by the American people. Both parties do it, and I hope whoever is elected in the next president will restrain that practice and let Congress decide these issues, who's ultimately accountable. This one in particular is one that sounds good, right? Why shouldn't we have these agents, keeping the best interest of their customers, which is what they actually do? This regulation ultimately puts a burden on them that would allow them to have less options for their customers, drive up the cost, reduce the ultimate investment opportunities for those customers. And if you sit down, and I'd ask if the advocates for it have sat down and talked to the people that actually have to impose this regulation be imposed upon, it actually creates more harm than good and defeats the underlying purpose.
Congressman Cleaver?
Actually, that legislation comes under the jurisdiction of the committee on which I sit, which is – I'm the ranking Democrat on the House Committee on Housing and Insurance. The CFPB does ask for comments, and we all federal agencies will ask for comments from Congress, and there's a comment period, sometimes 30, 45, 60 days, and in this particular instance, I think we had a 30-day comment period, and what we try to do is make sure people understand that individual members of Congress can send letters or meet with the Director Cordray of the CFPB or some staff members, some of his staff members, but that the way the legislation was designed that created the CFPB means that there is no vote. It's regulations. It's a regulatory issue. Mm-hmm. And so our vote, I know the gentleman who called probably thinks otherwise, but that vote didn't matter. It was a nice thing to do, and I guess puts people on the spot on where they stand. But the truth is, it means nothing.
Okay. Dale, I hope that helps. Let's go to Nancy from Fairway. Nancy, you're on Up Today. Good morning.
Good morning. I was hoping that both the congressmen could share their plans to how we can get a hold of entitlement spending.
Entitlement spending, Congressman Yoder, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, what about it?
Well, when you look at our national budget, entitlement programs are about 70% of what we spend. 30% goes to discretionary programs. That's going to be about half defense, half domestic. So when you think about our total budget, our entitlements are a huge part of where we're spending money. My grandmother's 105 years old. My parents are in their 70s. So we certainly know the value of Medicare and Social Security, Medicaid, these programs that help seniors in particular live retired lives with dignity. And we need to maintain these programs, keep them strong. We're all forced to pay into these programs. Emmanuel, people may be surprised to know we actually pay into them as well. I get those internet rumors sometimes.
Internet says we don't pay.
Right. we all pay into these programs, and those benefits are earned. They're deserved by the recipients. But one of the challenges we have when you just look at the tables going forward is we have about 10,000 seniors who retire every day in this country. We don't have 10,000 new workers. I think the ratio now is 2.1 in terms of workers to retirees when it started out like 1 to 40. We're also living longer, right? So we got baby boomers. We got people – we're living longer, which is great, but that comes with additional cost. And, of course, healthcare is more expensive than it was believed to be when Medicare was passed in the 60s.
So why not boost Social Security now instead of waiting for the huge crisis that's looming down the road when folks like me are in the middle of it?
That's where we need to go. We need to – I think both parties agree. We've had some disagreements about how to get there, but I'm hoping we all can agree that – we've got to make changes in a way that do really three things, that guarantee the benefits to those who've earned them, have paid in. So seniors near their retirement age that are retired, et cetera. We can't have austerity where you just do cuts to folks. That would be horrible. We need to maintain these programs for the long term so that people in my generation, the next generation, can come to count on these programs and know they're going to be there. But we need to make reforms that allow us to bend the cost curve. You're never going to see cuts, but slow the rapid growth, particularly in Medicare, in a way that allows us to balance our budget. We will never balance our books if we don't have plans to ensure that these programs exist in a way that we can afford them.
Now, to what extent are these issues on the congressional radar screen, the priority list right now, Congressman Cleaver? Because I'm not hearing a whole lot of talk about Social Security reform in this campaign for president, much less anybody talking on the Hill right now.
Well, those issues are not being discussed. And I think that goes to the point you raised earlier about the public perception of Congress and how we are held in such low esteem. And that is, we are doing, Kevin's absolutely right, we're doing a lot of things together. He was on 3700, the HUD bill I mentioned. Mm-hmm. We do need reform. First of all, I need to say, I just personally don't think Social Security should be considered an entitlement because people pay out of that 6% out of their paycheck. They pay for that, and the money's invested. But I do think we need to do some kind of entitlement reform, and I think everybody realizes it. So the question is, so why aren't we doing it? And the issue is because we've become so politically tribal that we can't sit down in a room like this with people around the table and say, do what Tip O'Neill and Ronald Reagan did. Mm-hmm. To keep Social Security from being defunct back in 85 or 86, I can't remember.
Mm-hmm.
And because, you know, we have moved progressively toward tribalism since that time. So the issues like this, which every American is concerned about because they're approaching a retirement age or they're retired or they have parents and grandparents. So that's what the public wants us to deal with, these issues that they have to get up every morning and deal with, and we're not dealing with those things.
Mm-hmm. Are there areas of compromise here, or is the whole issue of entitlement reform just too far gone right now for Congress to deal with?
Well, I think Democrats are slowly creating a coffee party to rival the Tea Party, and that is people who continue to move further and further to the left. I'm not one of them because I think that we've got to reform some of the entitlements. And I think that anybody who says, well, we're not touching entitlements is contributing to the problem.
Hmm.
We have to do it. We have to do it wisely. And both sides have got to be together. You can't do it and have one side attacking the other for having done it.
Yeah. This hour, we're visiting with our two area members of Congress, Congressman Kevin Yoder from Kansas's 3rd District, Congressman Emmanuel Cleaver from Missouri's 5th. 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Congressman Yoder, how do the two of you grade Speaker of the House Paul Ryan, who's been in the job since last October? Has he been the speaker you hoped he would be?
Yeah, I think he's actually done a good job.
Not an easy job.
Yeah, it's a hard, first of all, it's a very, very hard job. And I think Speaker Boehner found that out as well. And I think it's maybe the hardest job in Washington, D.C.
I
think he's been positive in many regards. He, I think, has gone on programs, 60 Minutes, et cetera, and gone out and talked about what our agenda is. So he's allowed folks to hear from him in a way that I think he expresses very well. He's a regular guy. You know, he's from Wisconsin. He hunts on the weekends. He's loves his kids. One of his caveats of taking the job was he had to be able to spend weekends at home with his family,
mm-hmm.
which a lot of these leaders don't have time to do. And so he's a likable guy. And I think he's positive in that the way he expresses what he wants to do is maybe not as partisan and combative as folks have seen. In fact, he gets maybe some of his harshest criticisms from people in my party who don't think he's combative and tough enough.
Yeah.
And, you know, what we all want is a house where everybody has a chance to be heard, where issues can be debated of substance. And I listed a bunch of them earlier, you know, that maybe don't get in the headlines of the newspaper, but are very significant issues. Those are moving forward in a way that I think is positive.
Congressman Cleaver, what's your take?
Well, I like the speaker. Certainly I shouldn't say anything negative. He was very kind to me on CNN recently. It caused me some heartache, however. it was on a Wednesday when he did the interview. On Thursday morning, going to the Democratic caucus meeting, when I walked in, it was.
What did he say again?
What did he say about you?
He said, you know, they were asking him, you know, well, how are you working with both sides? And he said, well, we have a great congressman from Missouri, Emmanuel Cleaver. I have a very good relationship with him. I talk with him. And, oh, no, man.
Yeah.
But I think he is a good guy. He did something that was extremely important. He said, look, I made some bad comments that I shouldn't have made. And he said, I'm not going to do it again. He said, I've said too many times that in our country we have some givers and takers.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you won't hear that anymore. And he stopped. I respect him for that. My fear is that he will be Boehnerized. And because the same people who did John Boehner in are still there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Ryan wants to make things work, but John Boehner did as well. We got $25 million for body cameras. After a meeting with Al Green, Congressman Al Green and I, with John Boehner. And I think Ryan is the same kind of guy, but make no mistake, those guys are still there, and I don't think any of them are going to lose. I think all of them will be back,
Let's turn to the current political situation across the country. Just on Friday, the respected Republican pollster Neil Newhouse was in town speaking to the Greater Kansas City Chamber of Commerce, pointed out that this race between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump will ultimately decide nothing, in his view, when it comes to the ongoing partisan warfare in this country. Congressman Yoder, what do you make of that? Does that sound about right to you?
Well, I don't know if that's right. I think there's a lot at stake here. And, you mentioned earlier, or Emanuel mentioned earlier, the 86-85 Social Security agreement that occurred. Today happens to be the 20th anniversary of the Clinton welfare work program, the End Welfare as We Know It program is the 20th anniversary today when that was signed into law. There are examples through the last few decades of where Congress and the president worked together in opposite parties, whether it was Reagan and Tip O'Neill.
Clinton and Newt Gingrich.
Clinton and Newt Gingrich. And they were impeaching Clinton, for gosh sakes, and they were still achieving policy gains that were bipartisan and significant. And that's something that has, I think, escaped us as we talked about entitlement reform earlier. You know, they tried a grand bargain. You know, we can do tax reform, spending reform, entitlement reform. You know, you had the Simpson-Bowles Commission. You know, we need bold, strong ideas to fix the problems that are facing this country. The American people are ready for it. Many of us are ready for it. We're ready to take tough votes. We're ready to do heavy lifting and work together and to give and take that needs to really do the legislating possible. But all of that is difficult without leaders in the White House who help facilitate that. And my hope is that whoever's elected president, that starting next year, we have a fresh start to be able to work together. It's very likely that we will have some type of divided government going into 2017.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an opportunity to – it's either a check and balance or it's an opportunity to work together.
Yeah. Well, what do you make of the tone of this presidential campaign that's going on right now, Congressman Cleaver? Is this going to help achieve what Congressman Yoder just laid out, some of these big decisions, bold moves that have to be made going forward, or is the tone of the campaign undercutting that?
Oh, I think the tone of the campaign is embarrassing. It should be embarrassing to everybody. I think we should not have a political contest where we are saying some of the things that are being said and speculating some of the things that are being speculated. I think it's unfortunate. This election may not turn us back. But here's my little dumb preacher philosophy. When the election is over, and it should have happened before now, somebody should have figured it out. It's much smarter than me. The new administration should not come in with the most ideologically combustible issues, because then you poison the well for 4 years. I think you come in with some things that we all agree on. Let's start out on a transportation bill, or let's declare that Friday is still Friday. And then we vote. Kevin and I, we agree on
that. I'm with you on that.
See?
Yeah. Yep.
And then we move from there. But what if you start out on affordable health care and an energy bill,
immigration reform.
That's going to be war.
Yeah.
So what my suggestion, if anybody listens to me, is that let's start out in a peaceful kind of way on things that we can get along on.
Okay. Let's go back to some phone calls. Some folks been waiting very patiently here. Mike from Kansas City, Missouri. Mike, you wanted to bring up that $400 million paid for ransom again. Good morning.
Yes. My comments on that was, I'm believing the president that it was $400 million that the Shah had given the United States for weapons, and then he got overthrown and so it was their money to start with. But the other thing is, if we were using that as ransom, as a payment of ransom, we can't afford $100 million a person. So I think that makes it look completely ridiculous.
Hang on a second. I think Congressman Cleaver addressed some of that. This was the money that had been held in bank accounts since the late 70s, and that was your point earlier.
Yeah, the money was not tax dollars. The money was money that belonged to Iran. It was held simply, maybe nothing is simple, but it was held to assure that we didn't get a bad deal in the end where the Iranians said, we give them the money that they're supposed to get, and we still don't get the hostages. We knew they needed that money, or the president knew that they needed that money. It was their money, and we're saying, hey, we're going to give you your money, but we want to see
let's
those.
Let's get something for it.
Right.
Yeah, okay.
But which is still, whether it's a thing of it's a thing of value that was transferred for return of hostages, and it still makes it that
that's
quid pro quo that I think a lot of people in both parties are concerned about, and the administration initially said that was not the case, and that continues to remain, I think, a problem for a lot of people.
Kathy from Kansas City, Missouri. Kathy, you're talking to Congressman Emanuel Cleaver, Congressman Kevin Yoder. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you. I think both congressmen have mentioned a couple of times this morning about their disappointed in public perception of maybe a do-nothing Congress. And, you know, I think there was something a lot of folks didn't realize that was very big for this region and for the country that was very nonpartisan and very significant that happened in the last appropriations bill. And I think Congressman Yoder may have mentioned it just a few minutes ago, but that was the appropriation of $2 billion with a B additional dollars for NIH funding, something I believe had not that kind of increase hadn't been, we haven't seen that in over a decade. Many people I know applaud that, people in the business community, certainly people in the healthcare community, that's important for cures. Happy to see it after over a decade, but that's just a drop in the bucket for what is needed. So I wanted to ask both congressmen, whom I believe supported this, what is your perspective, your prognosis for the opportunity for future increases, and what can we as citizens do to assist that? Because that is just critical. You work together on it. What can we do to see more?
How about boosting NIH funding in the future, Congressman Yoder?
Yeah, I've called for doubling the NIH budget over the course of a decade. So we were at $30 billion last year. I've called to get to $60 billion by 2025 to keep up with inflation, to continue to be the world's leaders in medical research. We have to have those types of investments. Not only does it save lives, it creates jobs. Kathy mentioned that impact on the Kansas City economy, KU, and across our region. There's a lot of companies
NMU.
And a lot of jobs NMU. Related to research.
NMU. Mm-hmm.
Is that a school? I'm not familiar with
well,
them.
Just,
community college?
I'm just saying.
One of Kathy's points to Congressman Cleaver was, what can the average citizen do to boost what Congressman Yoder's talking about here?
Well, I think one of the things that people probably don't realize, and that is that when they send letters, those letters are opened, and members of Congress will often come to the floor and say, look, I have a stack of letters on this subject.
And letters are more effective than email?
No, either. Either.
Okay.
Either.
Okay.
And actually, email is better because it takes two or three, sometimes weeks, to get our mail because after the anthrax scare, the mail is sent to a processing plant where they put
it screened and
irradiated. Yes. I think,
yeah, because they'll come back burned.
Yellow.
And so we may not get it for 3 weeks.
Oh, that's good for people to know. Yeah.
So
okay.
Email is better.
Okay. Let's go to Eileen here from Lenexa. Eileen, good morning.
Good morning. I have a call for a question for Congressman Yoder. Following up on the NIH funding, which is just preceding this question, we've got so much interest in health, which you've talked about. My concern at the moment is I'm thinking back to the Ebola crisis and how that was handled, and now we have a Zika crisis, and yet only one third of the funding that was requested from the president and the Center for Disease Control was appropriated, and you voted for that, only one third. And so I guess I would like a more of an explanation on that, and what can we do in the future to be ready for these types of crises.
Yeah, thank you, Eileen. What about your vote on the Zika
virus? It's a good question. You know, and with someone, you know, we have two little girls under the age of three. And so we think about these things in a very personal way and their impact on pregnant mothers across the country. One of the reasons I've been such a passionate advocate for NIH funding and medical research is to ensure that we're advancing these cures before these diseases take hold, like Zika is, that you can't just come up with a cure for a disease overnight, right? And so one of the reasons I'm calling for doubling the NIH budget so that we're ahead of the curve on these things. So Congress forwarded legislation that would – I think, put $600 million into additional money into Zika research. You know, we just were talking about heralding the $2 billion increase we did for NIH. This is a pretty big number, $600 million just for Zika. And what Republicans have said is there's leftover money in the Ebola fund that could be used in an emergency for Zika to make up the additional funding necessary. This is a point of dispute. I really wish, frankly, that we could just let Emmanuel and I figure it out here on a piece of paper and get it done. I mean, there's no reason that either party should be blocking any of this legislation. The original bill we passed still hasn't made it to the president, even the partial funding. And I think Republicans like to be a little more conservative in terms of let's do this in tranches and not give every dollar, because sometimes, you know, it doesn't. But I just think in this case, it's better to overreact than to underreact. And I'm a yes, yes, yes. You put a bill in front of me that supports funding to combat Zika, I'm voting for it, even if it's not as high as I think or others think it should be.
Congressman Cleaver.
Well, I think it's important for the caller, and I agree. I would support it 100%. What happens a lot too often, and it goes back to the whole point of trying to get people in Congress who are going to work together, and a poison pill amendment goes on, and that is you defund Planned Parenthood or, you know, something else. But on this one, Planned Parenthood. And then all of a sudden, the president says, I'm not going to sign it if you send it over. The Senate, with its arcane rules, one person can block it. So we can't get, you know, if it's a pure bill, I think we get a good vote.
Yeah. There's also an issue of EPA regulations that affect mosquito repellent and DDT, et cetera, that some in Congress I've supported temporarily suspending those regulations. We passed that bill in the House as well, and that's an issue that Democrats don't support quite as much. I think there's a way to come together here with funding and a temporary relief on those EPA regulations so that cities and counties can go to work. And we ought to just support the best of each side here and get this thing to the president, and hopefully we can do that when we get back in September immediately.
I want to go back to the presidential race, because folks will be curious, as the two of you are leaders of your own parties, how the two of you square the chief criticisms of your party's nominees with your expected support for them. Congressman Cleaver, you've heard this a million times. Hillary Clinton can't be trusted. Congressman Yoder, Donald Trump, his rhetoric over the top. Here today, you're calling for civility. How do you square support for Donald Trump with, you know, your call for civility here? Congressman Cleaver, go first. How do you deal with that criticism of Hillary Clinton?
I think a lot of it is unfortunate, because if the listeners had a chance to sit down in a room with her, there's a quite different perception that they would get. And I think that she knows more about government perhaps than anybody who's ever run for that office in history. And I think she will be good. Keep in mind that—
But she has been misleading at times, particularly when it came to the email crisis.
No question,
you know,
about it.
Yeah.
Some of the pundits go on TV and try to whitewash it. I'm not. But here's the thing I think that's important. Once she's in office, everything changes. And I speak most specifically about the Senate. If you talk to Democrats and Republicans in the U.S. Senate, from John McCain to McConnell, they say— Well, she was great to work with. We had great opportunities to fashion legislation together. They liked her. Lindsey Graham, they all spoke glowingly about her. They're not going to do it between now and November, but they have. And so I think, you know, once that's out of the way, we'll get a chance to have somebody in who might be able to lower the temperature. Because, look, Barack Obama is my friend. I've worked with him, as I've said before. He is... an introvert. That's not bad. That's just who he is.
Mm-hmm.
And that didn't help in many instances trying to get legislation through.
And you see Hillary Clinton being a little different on
that.
She
is a lot different. And she works with everybody. She's a joker. And people like to work with her. And I'm saying this from Republicans, from the Republican standpoint, because they've all gone on record saying it before the campaign started.
Congressman Yoder, how about the over-the-top rhetoric of Donald Trump and how you square yourself with that?
Yeah, I don't like that either. Frankly, he wasn't my choice in the Republican primary. I thought
Marco Rubio
was probably someone younger and I think could be more big tent and bring more people around. But look, he's brought a lot of folks into politics that haven't been engaged before. He's been a very unique candidate, of course. You know, both of these candidates are the lowest, I think, rated candidates that either party has ever put forward mm-hmm. in a presidential election, both scoring up against each other. In some ways, they're the best shot for each of them is against each other. You know, strangely, I think if we had Marco Rubio as a nominee, probably leading at this point. But there's a lot of road between here and the election. But I do have some of the same concerns. My hope is that we can focus the remaining 70-some days of this election on the big-ticket things that matter. Balancing the
Good
budget.
Luck with that.
Balancing the budget, defeating ISIS, you know, medical research, creating great schools in America. I mean, these are things that that robust debate is what we need. And so, Steve, we need the media, and we need, you know, Emmanuel and I and others to try to refocus our attention and try to get this country debating and discussing in a way that I think they're ready to and want to solve these big problems.
Just real quickly, Congressman Yoder, how satisfied are you that the Obama administration is not going to transfer the remaining detainees at Guantanamo Bay up to Fort Leavenworth right here in our backyard? Are we past the point of being concerned about that?
No, I think we're still concerned about it. I mean, the president has executive powers, which he's been obviously shown his ability to use in releasing prisoners. We don't want to bring the world's worst terrorists to U.S. soil, giving them trial by juries and all these things that come and they're on U.S. soil, plus making Fort Leavenworth a terrorist a target attack. And so oppose closing Guantanamo Bay and don't support bringing those prisoners here and hope that won't happen.
Okay. Congressman Yoder, appreciate your time very much. Always do.
Thank
Congressman
you.
Cleaver, thank you very much.
Good to be
Sorry
here.
We couldn't get to all our phone calls today. We'll do it again sometime real soon. Bill, Jennifer, Cindy, sorry we couldn't get you to here today. We'll do it again.